It is my great privilege to be with you here this morning and speak to you a little bit about some things that I've learned. And I wanted to start the session this morning, if you'll help me, with a little bit of an experiment. I know that just made some of you uncomfortable. I wonder, can I ask you to just close your eyes for a moment and try and relax as much as you can? Just feel that chair holding the weight of your body and sink into it. Yeah. Take a couple of deep breaths and let your mind kind of clear. Now, I would like you to think about a moment, something in the last few days or week that just kind of drifts into your mind right now. Not some earth-shaking, world-changing event, just some simple thing. Maybe it's a conversation with a friend or with a family member, a book, movie, good meal, just something that comes in. And when that moment comes, just stop with that moment. Don't let anything else come in. If it does, push it away and just kind of think about that moment for a second. What do you remember about that moment? Where are you? Anybody with you? Are you alone? What exactly do you see right now? What kind of details can you recall about that moment? Some colors, some smells. Are there some emotions attached to that moment right now? Or back when the moment happened. Maybe they're different. How much detail can you recall? Thank you. You can open your eyes. What was that like for you? What was that experience like for you? When I take the time to do something like that, it often surprises me how much detail I can remember about a simple moment. Or sometimes the depth of an emotion that it might bring up to me. Maybe I saw some smiles on some faces. Or maybe a tear in your eye. But let me ask you this. Do you think you would have taken any time to reflect on that moment if we hadn't done this little exercise this morning? Likely not. That moment would have maybe been glanced over a little too quickly or dismissed or kind of lost in the busyness of our days. And yet, when you took a moment to reflect, it came so easily into your mind, into your thoughts. Now that you've spent a little time thinking about that moment, is it just a little bit different in your memory? Is it kind of stored differently there? You might even think about it once or twice more today, or maybe you might even want to tell a friend about it now that you've spent some time on it. What about the thousands, hundreds, and thousands of other moments that take place over the course of our life that are just kind of lost, gone over so quickly? What if finding, capturing those simple moments in everyday life were in fact the basis for living a full and complete and rich life? How many of those moments are hidden in our consciousness somewhere? In researching this talk, I was directed by my coach to read the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm not one for delving too often into Old Testament scriptures, but I found this book to be rather interesting. Ecclesiastic, when translated, means teacher, and it was written by King Solomon, who was son of David, third king of the Israelites. And it was written later in his life, as he was reflecting on his life. King Solomon was legendary for wisdom and wealth and bringing great prosperity to his country and for indulging in a few other pleasures of life, shall we say. As king, he would have had it all, right? Power to command an army, great wealth, herds of cattle and sheep, servants to do his bidding, like he lived on the best house on the block. Would have wanted for naught. He was a good king. He accomplished a lot. In Ecclesiastic, this king is reflecting on his life, what he's learned about his achievements, his wealth and his power, and his other pursuits, seeking meaning in his life. And what he has to say is really not that positive.
Call me the teacher. I've been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I've looked most carefully into everything, and let me tell you, there's not much to write home about. Smoke. Nothing but smoke. There's nothing to anything. It's all smoke. Everything's boring. Utterly boring. No one can find any meaning in it. Boring to the eye. Boring to the ear. What was it? What was will be again. What happened will happen again. There is nothing new on this earth. Year after year, it's the same old thing.
If you take this story out of the Bible, it's a story of a man, an older man, who, at least from outward appearances, is very successful, has accomplished much, would seem to have had a very successful, full life. And yet, his personal memories, his own words on his life, do not reflect that. He does a lot more reflecting, and near the end of the book, he has something different to say. It's this.
God deals out joy in the present, the now. After looking at the way things are on this earth, here's what I've decided is the best way to live. Take care of yourself. Have a good time. And make the most of whatever job you have for as long as God gives you life. And that's about it. It's God's gift. God deals out joy in the present, the now. Seize life. Eat bread with gusto. Drink wine with a robust heart. Relish life with a spouse you love. Each and every day of your precarious life, each day is God's gift. It's all you get in exchange for the hard work of staying alive. And make the most of each one. Whatever turns up, grab it and do it. And heartily, this is your last chance at it. For there's neither work to do nor thoughts to think in the company of the dead. We are most certainly headed. Oh, how sweet the light of day, and how wonderful to live in the sunshine. Even if you live a long time, don't take a single day for granted. Take delight in each light-filled hour.
Thank you, Miranda. So in his reflections on his life, he's questioning the things that make his life meaningful for him. Power, money, stuff. And his final conclusion is this: live for the day. Rejoice in whatever it brings. Pay attention to the moments. Eat a good meal. Enjoy a glass of wine. Have a conversation with a friend. I just recently turned 68, so I'm kind of on my way up the ladder, or possibly down the ladder, depending on which way you look at it. And I think it's obvious from this oxygen hose that's up my nose that I may be in a period of my life when I'm fairly reflective on my life. And one of the questions I've been asking myself is, do I know anything about this business of living in the moment, living for a day? And the answer I've come with is, yeah, I do. There's just things you learn as time goes on. It's not wisdom, it's just time. And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning. So let me tell you a story. Story about me. In 2006, January, I was in San Diego, California, with my wife, Jean, and a team of people from our church. We had just crossed the border from Mexico, where we were building houses with Homes of Hope, it was called. And we checked into a hotel we were going to spend the weekend before we went home Sunday night. I'd been living in a dorm for about 10 days, and the first thing I wanted to do was have a really, really long, really, really hot shower. Really long, really hot. And I did. And when I got out of the shower, I felt a little funny. I got dressed and I came out of the bathroom, and it just hit me like that. It's like somebody drove a stake into my chest or parked a truck on it. And I knew right away what it was. And I turned to my wife, Jean, and I said, I'm having a heart attack. And I'm not kidding. Sad that rolling around on the floor, I still had to tell my wife that I wasn't joking. There was a series of coincidences that followed that. I choose to believe miracles. And because of them, obviously, I survived this heart attack. The doctor the next day came in and saw me and said, Mr. Smiley, you're a very lucky man. When people have a heart attack of this magnitude, we usually don't get a chance to even operate. Number of reasons why I survived that. For certainly the skill of the nurses and doctors and technicians and people who helped me. Also, being in the United States of America, the operation cost $96,000. And I just knew I had to live for a long time to pay that off. That and the fact that my wife kept calling out of the darkness, Jerry, Jerry, what's your PIN number? I jest. She's my angel. I can remember her tears falling off her face on my cheek. I did some research. People who have near-death experiences often have an immediate surge, peak, if you want, in awareness. They see things that they didn't see before. They feel things that they didn't feel before. It happens to most of them. The research also says that after a period of time, it falls off. I didn't have that peak, and I didn't have that fall off. I didn't really give it much thought at the time. I just went on. Jean and I made a holiday out of being in California for 2 weeks. She pushed me around at the San Diego Zoo in a wheelchair. Of course, when we got to the hill, she let go of the handles a bit to show me who was the boss, but we just did that. I didn't give it much thought at the time. I'll come back to that. I want to flash ahead to 2013. In 2013, I was sitting in my doctor's office, and he was explaining to me that I have a lung condition called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. It's all the words you don't want to hear. It's progressive. It's incurable. And statistically, the life expectancy is somewhere between 3 and 5 years. I'm coming close to 4 now. I wonder if, for just a little bit, you could look through my lenses for a bit. What would you do if you found out you had a very short time to live? Or a defined number of years to live? What would you do? I did a lot of things. We changed our diet. We did some other things. I talked to a lot of people. Doctors and pastors, psychiatrists, friends. And I got a lot of good advice. But I also heard this kind of theme. Better build your bucket list. I'm not a fan of the bucket list. The bucket list has this tendency to focus out in the future somewhere. It's sort of this idea that if I get the things done on this list, I'll have been successful in life. And it just didn't sit right with me. Again, I didn't quite understand it. Let me go back to a long time ago, 1980, November 19th to be exact. I was a pretty sick man. I was lost in a horrible disease that's lonely, that's scary, called alcohol addiction. My life was out of control. If you can believe this, the night before I had been arrested at my company Christmas party. I was sitting in my living room trying to drink a cup of coffee. I used to only fill it half full because I couldn't get it to my face without spilling it all over me. And I said these words, God, I don't want to live like this anymore. I didn't mean God. I meant God, I don't want to live like this anymore. And I haven't had a drink for almost 36 years now. But I was introduced to a 12-step program. It's the big one. I'm not going to mention the name. You know which one it is. One of the premises in 12-step programs is living one day at a time. And there's some very specific steps that they taught me to do that, although I didn't realize at the time that's what they were doing. And I started to do those things. I started to do them because I didn't want to drink. But after a period of time, my life started to change. I started to see things different. It was like I had put on a new pair of glasses. So no bucket list for me, because I'd been shown, taught, that living a full life was not based on getting some things done, but rather on living a full life every moment with gratitude for as many days as I have. Earlier, I didn't know why I didn't have that huge spike. And it's because I was so completely content with living my days, and I didn't know how that happened. It was as though these steps, these things that I had done to stay sober, had become not steps anymore, but so deeply ingrained in me that they were a way of living. They were principles by which I lived my life. And I've given some thought to them over time, and I've changed them, I've modified them, I've made them fit the way I live my life, and I call it harvesting. I used to work on my uncle's farms in the summertime, and come harvest time, what you do is you go into this field, and there's a wheat field, and it looks like grass. You can't see the wheat. And you do some work. And through that work, you find these little golden kernels. These little precious golden kernels. And you capture them, and you take them to this granary, and you store them. My concept of harvesting is harvesting time. Harvesting my days, harvesting the moments. Finding the little golden moments in my day. Capturing them and storing them differently in my memory. Seize the day, live one day at a time, live each day like it's your last. They're nice sayings. How do you do that? How do you do that? This idea of harvesting for me, these golden moments, it's based on three things. Three principles, three ideas, three processes, if you want to call them that, that have evolved over 36 years. And they constitute for me a simple discipline for finding and capturing and storing simple moments. And here it is. Number one, first thing, start each day deliberately. with intent, setting your expectation for the day. I wake up in the morning and I think a little bit about my day, what I'm going to do, where I'm going to go, and then I say a simple prayer. God, give me the eyes to see, give me the ears to hear, and the courage to feel every emotion as deeply as I can. If you're not a prayer, it can be a thought, an affirmation. It can be what works for you. Sometimes it's been part of a huge devotion. Reading and meditation and other things. It's taken a long time. Sometimes it's been the prayer laying in bed. Sometimes when I'm really busy, it's been in the shower. It doesn't seem to me to be important what is said, how many words, or when. It's about setting the intent. And the second principle, the third principle, I mean, I know two comes after one. Just bear with me, as I'm not suffering from some kind of brain depredation based on oxygen. I'll get back to it and you'll understand why. My third principle is that somewhere near the end of each day, take a little time to simply reflect on the day. Much the way we did when we did our little exercise together earlier. Just to think about what happened in the day. What moments, what memories are there to harvest from this day? What conversations, what people, what simple things? You know, that was nice. That was not so nice. Man, that was a good salmon steak. Important things to search for the moments and briefly think about them. Occasionally, I write it out, especially if it's been a really busy day. I do that because it's, when you have a lot of thoughts in your brain going like this, it's kind of like trying to count your laundry while it's still in the dryer, you know? If you stop and lay it out, you can find out where the white socks go and the black socks go. Not every time, but sometimes I do that. Somehow that seems to store those moments differently in my memory. Takes it from the external focus to an internal experience. Brings it into my being. And the second principle is this. Stop periodically throughout the day and ask myself how it's going. I cheat a little here. I use a little technology. I got a cell phone. And I have a reminder. 11:30, 5:30, one word, harvest. I know what it means. Sometimes I see it and I see that I did something earlier in the day. I ended a conversation too early. I did something I'm not proud of. And I have an opportunity to go back and fix it. Sometimes I just see it, man, the day's going good, and I move on. Purpose is just to stop briefly, just remind myself of my intent. I'm trying to live as much as I can in this moment, in this day. Lots of things have happened since I started doing this over the years. The moments are interesting, just... One day, my grandson, Caius, he climbed up at the dinner table, and he said to Mom, his mom, he said, Mom, Gramps and I, we really like ourselves. Little Freudian slip there. But it was just a beautiful moment where this five-year-old, not understanding language all that well yet, wanted to express something that he knew existed between his grandpa and him. My granddaughter, Naya, one day was in front of the house of Granda. She's a nervous little thing. My hands were out the car, and she was holding my fingers with like this, and talking to me. Grandpa, Grandpa, will you come back later and help me build a birdhouse for my mom? And I can see those little fingers wrapped around mine and just holding Grandpa like that. I can see every detail of it. One day I opened the top drawer of my dresser, and there are all my socks put together in a way that I don't know how it's done. My t-shirt's all nicely folded in the middle, and my underwear all rolled and stacked over here. Not the way I would have crammed it in the drawer. And I just reviewed it and realized my wife does that for me every week. Every week. And when I reviewed it, I was just filled with this sense of the hundreds of other things that she does for me. And I never forget to say thank you to her when I go to bed at night anymore. The more I practice this, it seems, the more simple little moments like that just leap off the page into my being. More and more of them, and I see more detail in them. But it took practice. I was sitting on a park bench one of the first early spring days this year, warm day, and having a cup of coffee, and this lady sat down beside me, and we just started talking about the weather. She saw my oxygen tank, and she asked me about it, and I told her what was going on with me, and she asked me if there was anything I could do about it, and I said, there's no cure. The only hope is that there's a chance someday I could get a lung transplant. And she told me that she's waiting to have an operation, and that she was really scared. And I told her, you know, I'm not even waiting for it yet, but I've been a little scared thinking about it. And we talked about it. She texted her boss and told her boss she was going to be late coming to work. And we talked for an hour and a half. And when she left, she just said goodbye, thank you. And I said, thank you. It's the word I like to say the most. It's the word I like to hear the most. But it seems that I'm much more willing to engage in the moments every day. In fact, I want to create those moments, not just for me, but for other people. It's a huge shift. Before my wife and I were married, we used to get together at her house almost every night, and she would have these little yellow sticky notes, right? And she would write on the yellow sticky note things she wanted to talk about. Sometimes it was really simple things like, you know, we're going to have coffee with Jeff and Joe on Saturday. And sometimes it was things she really wanted to talk about. When we got married, she would come to bed at night with the sticky notes. And sometimes I'd negotiate. She'd say, there's three things, and I go, oh, three. I'm really tired. Can we do two tonight, one tomorrow? And we started having so much fun with it. And we would laugh about it so much. If I saw her, like, writing out a grocery list, and I'd go, oh, my God, I hope that's not a sticky note, you know? And we laughed so much about it and had so much fun. And one day I was waiting to drive to church, actually, and Jean came and she sat down in the car. And she said, Jerry, when you're gone, I'm still going to take those sticky notes to bed every night and talk to you. And we held hands and we wept. But that night, when I harvested that moment, I found sadness. But I found laughter. I found memory of how much fun we had with that. And I found this incredible joy of knowing that I had become that close to another human being. Through doing this, I find richness in emotions I didn't even know existed till I review them. And I've found that I'm far less afraid to face into the sad moments, the uncomfortable moments of my life. Because I harvest them and they become like pages in the book that is the life of Jerry Smiley. Far less fear. I want to tell you that I have not achieved any sort of perfection with this process. I can have Gene come up here and attest to that fact if need be. I don't claim any kind of perfection, but I claim some progress. I asked you earlier if you could put on the same glasses as me for a little bit. And I want to say to you now, we all wear the same glasses as I do. None of us knows how many days there are, nor what those days will bring. But all of us share one thing. We share this day, today. So what do you think? You want to breathe a little deeper? Feel the sunshine on your face? Do you know that being here is divine? I can't say with any kind of certainty how you might go about adopting the things I talked about this morning. I hope you do. I hope you find it useful. I certainly can't say with any certainty what the days will bring or how many days there are. I can say with absolute certainty, based on my experience, that practicing something like this sin of a simple discipline, has given me a much fuller, much richer, much more content life. And I believe that it can do something for you as well. Thank you, Miranda, for coming up and reading with me. Thank you to these musicians who take us to beautiful moments over and over every week. Thank you all for allowing me to share a little bit with you this morning. Let's go find some golden moments today.